Okay, I have a special treat today. I have talked a couple of my friends and founders of portfolio companies that I'm invested into coming in and sharing their story today. It's the story of Legato Whiskey. I've got Charmaine Magali and Yvette Rincon, and we're going to be talking about what it's like to be a founder. These two have started this whiskey company along with two other partners, and somehow they decided to let me in on the action a little bit. So we're going to talk about that, where they came from, how they established their team, because a lot of founders, a lot of us out there are thinking about, like, how do I build that right team? Because it's if you don't have the right team, it's pretty tough to win in life as well as entrepreneurship. But we're also going to talk about, like, what it's like to do that while having these other businesses. You own other businesses. You are working in other areas. How you divide up all these responsibilities in your life with, I think between the four founders, there's nine kids. So we're going to kind of talk about that work-life balance, if that really even exists. But then we're going to talk about your plans for the future, because you are also in the process of raising money. So how does all that work? Today, it's going to be a fun show. So let me start off and talk to you, Charmaine, about how you and Yvette and the other two founders all decided to get together on this whiskey idea.
So I think it started with Yvette and I. We kind of, you know, developed this love for whiskey and really started to really look into different flavor profiles. We're really intrigued by it and sort of the art behind different flavors. And
isn't whiskey kind of like a guy's drink? I mean, you always think of, like, somebody drinking Jack Daniels, and it's always a Jack and Coke or something. It almost seems like it's always a guy, and a woman might order something else,
vodka cran,
or something. They order something that's a little more fruity, or something like that.
Yeah, and it's true, absolutely. And historically, it's been, you know, sort of a man's drink. And so, you know, in 2012, a good friend of ours, Brian, he is a huge Maker's Mark lover, and I kind of looked at him and was like, what's that about? He was drinking it, like, in a glass neat without ice. I'm like, what's that about? And so we started to kind of, you know, sort of dabble in it, and really saw the kind of different elements and the different layers of and complexities of whiskey through that. And then we started kind of going up and down the West Coast, like visiting different distilleries up and down, like into Washington and Vancouver, Canada, my hometown, and sort of saw this kind of absence of women in the distillery space, in the spirit space. And I was like, where are all the women? It's, you know, male forklift drivers, male owners, male head distillers, tasting room, bartenders. So,
And then we also noticed in Sacramento itself, there was, wasn't really a presence as well. I mean, there are some outside of Sacramento, kind of in the suburbs of Sacramento, that are popping up, have popped up. And most recently, probably J.J. Pfister is the more prominent one.
Well, it's interesting. The first time I met you, it was all four of you, Yvette. It was four powerful women, right? So attractive, powerful women coming in here. And it sort of blew me away, because not only were you confident, but you had this level of humility that kind of came along with that, kind of a presence of, like, wow, I have to invest into these people. What are we? This is just too good to be true. Four women doing whiskey, which sounds fun, and I've got to figure out a way to get on the team. Thankfully, you were kind enough to bring me on board. But, I mean, what about building that team? So it's interesting that you two had the kind of the initial, I guess, love or idea for discovering whiskey. How did you bring the other two along, and why did you bring the other two along with you? Right. Why not just go with you two?
I think we thought, you know, we had our plates full at the time, and we wanted to do something fun with whiskey, and we just recognized that bringing on a team would add value, you know, other players that can play other roles that might help the team strengthen. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we reached out to Christy DeSalle, because she's a serial entrepreneur. We thought, right, you know, you really need to have
She owns restaurants and things like that, right?
Right, yeah. Right. And then she brought in Hola because of her experience in the industry already. So we thought, okay, this would round out the team pretty well. And when we met and started talking about it, everyone immediately jumped on board and saw the vision and the passion behind it and agreed that they wanted to be part of the team.
Well, maybe we talk about that. How do you, so you have four powerful women, mm-hmm, and you all have other things going on in your life. You own a couple of businesses too, don't you, Charmaine?
Yeah.
You own like a cryotherapy and mm-hmm some other things.
Yeah, I'm actually, my profession is I'm a chiropractor.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so I've had a practice for 18 years now, and I built the practice. I used to, you know, be in practice 5 days a week, kind of grinding it out, and now I'm there, you know, 3 days a week practicing. It's pretty, you know, so I have a business partner that him and I, you know, do well together. So I can kind of step away. I've created some space around mm-hmm the practice where it's, I have a great team that runs it, and I have to do very little marketing because it's all word of mouth after 18 mm-hmm years of being in the profession. So it allows me to get some space around being able to do this other
project. Well, what
project
about that? You work for the city, right? You have this...
I have a full-time job.
A full-time gig. And between the two of you, you have three children, two twin daughters and an older child.
A son.
Son. Yeah. So, okay. So this is kind of multiple jobs, plus you're in a startup or an early stage company with the three mm-hmm kids. What do you do on the team? I mean, what's your role?
Yeah, it's very challenging. My job is full-time, and it requires all of my energy during the 40 hours that I'm there.
Okay.
So my role is mostly on the support side. Charmaine's really running point guard, right? And for us, all the rest of us, we're all support in our roles.
Okay, mm-hmm. So Charmaine, you're the president of the company.
Yes,
everything sort of rolls up to you in mm-hmm terms of like responsibility for the execution of the day-to-day.
Right.
Then the other players on the team, how do you divide up the responsibility? Sounds like Yvette doesn't really do anything.
She drinks whiskey.
Okay.
She's our taste tester.
Perfect.
And actually, she's kind of our resident bartender, too, because she creates some of the recipes and stuff.
Oh, but, sweet. Yeah. Okay,
but
good.
It's great. We've really developed into our roles. We're, you know, we've kind of are playing to our strengths. Yvette has a really great strength of financial analysis and background with. So she's our CFO, and she helps on the sort of sales and overlook kind of our distributor relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Chrissy's our COO, so she does a lot of our operational things. But she has, you know, her value is really awesome in that she has deep roots in Sacramento. So she has a lot of great relationships and a huge network where she's brought in a lot of relationships, whether it's restaurant and bars, because she has those relationships currently. And so she has that aspect of, you know, kind of the retail side of, you know.
And then Ola, you talked about her having some industry experience.
Yeah, so she has, she had a martini, red drink martini, and she now has a sparkling wine out on the, in the market. So hers is more of like a sales kind of, and giving that background of like the marketing and the distributorship as well. So
okay, so you have a well-rounded team. Is there anything missing from the team? What are any are all the gaps filled between the four of you, or do you have other areas where you're like, hey, we're early stage, now we got to fill in a few gaps? Has that surfaced yet?
I think our gap that we've recently filled was kind of a boots on the ground sales. So we've hired someone recently that has a ton of experience, and he's been hitting the ground running and sprinting, and so he's been really opening up a ton of accounts for us on the restaurant bar.
So you brought in a guy with the four women, huh? Okay,
regional sales manager. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, there's no problem more sales won't fix, right? So you've got this early stage company. What are the biggest challenges you've run into?
I mean, time is also always a challenge, balancing everything out. In terms of the business itself, it's, you know, we're coming into another raise to grow faster. I mean, the more money you have, the faster you can grow, I feel, is kind mm-hmm of our experience.
Well, I want to jump into that in a second, but you talk about time, right, with the three kids, and I know the other founders have children as well. I think you said nine between all of you,
mm-hmm,
and they're all under nine, I believe, so they're all little. So how do you juggle your time? I mean, any advice to other people who are trying to do it all, be it all, and still grow?
I mean, I think really it's being present with what you're doing in that moment, and really like scheduling out, like if this is the day that I am really going to work on Legato, chunking out that time. And then the minute I pick the kids up, that I'm present with them. I've got to let the other things go. Although there's 10 million emails and people texting you all day, but you know, really understanding that the present time consciousness behind, you know, have running the business and then having the time with the children and make sure that
you're... we're also able to, we try to be really aware of how many events we're scheduling, like not schedule 10 in 1 week, but then also leaning on each other, you know, if there are events we absolutely have to be at, we try to share that load in terms of, okay, you go tonight, I'll go the other night, you go here, we go. So
we've done some events with you where you've come out and poured at different events, and it would seem like you might drag the kids with you. I've never seen any little kids with you guys. So the kids can't come to work with you.
That's a little hard because it's at bars and restaurants.
Yeah, it's like, okay, that would be awkward. Go ahead.
We've learned to outsource too, a lot of, and learning like our capacity and our bandwidth. And so, and then just saying, look, we know when to say no. So we've got to pay somebody to go. And we have a great team now. And James is our regional sales manager. We have Stephanie and Bree that can run tasting events for us. Irene, that's, you know, kind of running our marketing. She's our new marketing director. So we've been able to kind of get a solid team behind us that if we needed to call on them, that they're ready to go. That's great.
What about, I'm thinking about one of the biggest challenges, I guess, in any business or any relationship is communication and thinking about the four founders all doing these other things. Are there certain rhythms or processes that get you together to make the big strategic decisions, or and then just the day-to-day operational stuff? How do you deal with the communication issues?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, with the advice of Tom Kanders, one of our investors, he turned us on to a company called People Catalysts. Carla Nelson and Alan and Kevin are great. They say hi, by the way. So, And I think in the last 3 months, we've really been working with them on our processes because they tell us, you know, 90% of failure isn't people failure, it's process failure. So they've been really helping us to hone in on that and creating days where, you know, we chunk out time to talk about culture, strategy, operations, back office. So if it's the first Tuesday, it's a red meeting, and that red meeting's back office, and it's 30 minutes. So we know who's going to run that meeting, what we're going to talk about. And then the second Thursday of the month is a purple meeting. That's our culture meeting. So that's going to, we're going to talk about, you know, our internal culture, external culture, celebrating successes. Yeah. And so they've been really helping to set us up in that way, that we, when it's time to scale up, and scaling up is allows us to be more successful because we have these processes in place that we know what day of the week we're going to be talking about what and where and who facilitates that. So it's really cool.
Are there ever times when you don't agree with each other?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like a yeah.
We're okay, four women.
How do you, okay, so you don't agree. How do you sort out the disagreements and move forward?
I think it depends on what the decision. If it's a big decision, we tried to come to a consensus, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's got to be a majority vote. And that's kind of what we learned from our time with Carla as well. It's like, it's okay to disagree, but just agree on how you're going to disagree. Right.
Yeah.
It's going to be a majority vote when it comes down to that. But if there's just day-to-day decisions that we don't agree on, we're not all like so stuck in our ways that we don't compromise or kind of give a little. But when it's a big decision and it comes down to a vote, we just all have to agree that that's going to be the process. And
I was definitely going to add on that. I think we're strong, but we're not bullheaded that we can't see like give and take, and we can't see eye to eye. And we're on this like path together, this trajectory together, that we are all on the same vision. So I think that really helps to stay. And that's, again, comes down to our culture and the culture we're building as a team is, you know, staying on the same page and communicating. And you know, women over-communicate, so we don't have problems with that.
Yes.
But it's just communication is really important. And
yeah, and I think so, our rhythm is mostly because Charmaine spends more time on the business. She's taking the lead. She's the president. So then she can communicate to me, to the others, and be kind of the hub.
Yeah, so the board sort of empowers her to run the business, and so most of those decisions get done by you. And
any big things, we come together to talk about.
Makes
sense.
Thinking about this, I want to get into your raise later, but thinking about, okay, so you have four founders, and you've had to divide up the shares so that people have different amounts of ownership, and then you're bringing on more investors and so on. It dilutes your ownership, and I mean, what's the rationale around having so many founders and continuing to raise? Is there a concern about you not owning enough to have it be meaningful for you?
I mean, I think that at the end of the day, the goal is to build this company up as much as we can in terms of value. That isn't an issue. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we don't want to get below a certain level of ownership.
How do you think about that? Is it you don't want to go below 50%? You don't want to go below?
Certainly 50% altogether.
So ultimately, you want to, the four of you retain
majority
ownership. Yeah. Okay, yeah. That way, because you four are locked in your messaging, and investors come in and you're maybe some rogue investor try to cause you a problem.
Right,
Mark Haney or Tom Candace come in.
Yeah, probably want to have that. We probably want to retain 51%.
I think it'd be Candace, actually. And for those of you that don't know, so Tom Candace, the other investor that we're referring to, he and I are like best friends. We're like brothers. Yeah. See, we're next door neighbors. See, I call myself the entrepreneur next door, but really he is my entrepreneur next door. So I think I brought him over to you guys.
Did.
I think I introduced you. Okay,
you did. Thank
cool.
you.
Hey, yeah.
He's been a great asset, and we're doing some consulting with him as well. And he's a great asset to be on our team.
Such a sharp guy. And thinking about that, so you bring in investors, you bring in me, you bring in Tom. How important was it? Say, let's use Tom, for example. His wisdom. He's built several companies and had nice exits and, you know, got a lot of experience. How important is that in an early investor?
I think it's really important, particularly just seeing what he's built and how he's built it. And I think that's a real valuable resource for us and his knowledge.
He's been so open, too, and available to us in terms of advising and wanting to help us grow. So it feels like he's been there, done that, and is ready to kind of lend a hand, you know, to bring others along. So that's been probably more valuable than the money that he's put in.
And he loves whiskey, too, I think.
We've heard stories.
I'm going to kind of move along here. Now you're in the present day operating the business. What are the big obstacles that typically in business, it seems like there's like one main obstacle. Is there like one big obstacle that's sitting in front of you today that you've got, if you hammer that out, it's smooth sailing?
Yeah, I think kind of the barrier entry for us is just the spirits space and women in the alcohol space, and how do we go up against other craft alcohol companies or big companies, like, you know, if we even do Bullet, Jameson, all those. And then figuring out kind of our marketing strategy around that to get case volume sold. And
at the end of the day, you want someone to pick that bottle off the shelf or ask for it at the restaurant or bar. And so at this point, we're working on brand awareness. And so
do you guys have a differentiation? I mean, it's for women. The name, by the way, Legato means legacy. I remember when you told me that, I was like, I sort of fell in love with the brand. Mm-hmm. You consider your brand kind of a differentiator at some level?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, by the look of it, if you walk down the aisle and you look at most of the bottles, it will stand out because it has a white label and it's pretty simple in its form. And so most bottles are darker colored and they look a certain way. And so I think it might catch most people's eye. But
I agree.
In terms of our brand and what we stand for, I think, is also kind of a differentiator.
You're listening to the podcast, you might switch over to YouTube and you can actually see a picture of the bottle. This is one that you four autographed for me, so I can't open it and crack it open. But
he just wants another bottle.
But I treasure this one. This is like a trophy, a symbol of one of my great great investments. Mm-hmm. And I keep it on the shelf. It reminds me of you. So the brand, the four women a piece of the brand, do you think?
And
at what level is that? I can see the characteristics of the bottle, of course, are unique, but is there something around around the word legacy or around the four women?
Yeah,
for sure.
I think, again, you know, part of what you've mentioned and what attracted you to us is kind of our humble beginnings that we've all have emphasized, in that we grew up, in families that are ethnic families, immigrant families who, you know, immigrated from all parts of the world, and growing up, maybe not with a lot of money and resources, and being diverse in ethnic cultures. So we don't really fit the mold of what you would traditionally see as whiskey kind of distillers, where it's
handed down generation.
Interesting.
And so
that's kind of the norm. And so for us, I think what also from our beginnings is what we've learned to this point in our life is that hard work pays off. Mm-hmm. And so even though we didn't start here in life and started here, our hard work has raised us up. And that's kind of part of the message, is the legacy of where we have come from, right? And so that's what we're wanting to do, is try to encourage people and really inspire people to say, look, even though it doesn't make sense, you look around in the industry and no one looks like you or talks like you or has ever done it before, with some hard work and the right team, you can get somewhere.
Do you make that? How do you get that messaging? Because that's what got me. We were face to face. I sensed it. I saw the bottle, but it was your presence that really brought me into that. And if you're going to scale a business, to share that that message in a way that reaches somebody that can't meet you face to face, how have you decided to tackle that?
I think immersing ourselves in the community this point, we're doing a campaign of awareness of our brand, and part of that brand is us. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you'll see out there. But also connecting with, we're doing dinners with other restaurants. We are partnering on a big event coming up in June.
We could say probably.
Where we'll be the main whiskey.
We'll be the official whiskey of the Sacramento Pride Festival. So, and back to Yvette's point, is supporting the groups where our voice is sort of similar. You know, we're getting invited to a lot of women functions. Mm-hmm. We're getting invited to LGBT functions. We're getting invited to different diverse groups to speak and to represent or to, sponsor or to pour. And so, I think by default, because of who we are as a group, we've attracted sort of that.
Yeah. What we're trying to get to a point is where you're not only buying the whiskey, but you're part of an experience, part of a group, I would guess you would say. But so we want people to buy the Legato, but also be part of our community, be part of what we stand for and what we are trying to inspire in others, is that you can do anything with hard work. And you, as crazy as it might seem, there are other people out there to support you, like us. And to help you to
that's
get
interesting
there.
About building a community, because here at Haney Biz, we're sort of building an entrepreneurial community. I shouldn't say sort of. We have an entrepreneurial community, early stage, even medium-sized companies. Some of them are our portfolio companies, but it's anybody who is forward-leaning, focused here in the Sacramento region today on growing as an entrepreneur. But thinking about scaling, so this is kind of an interesting thing, because we invest into a company like yourself, or even here at Haney Biz. To me, I feel like I can build a very nice business right here in Sacramento by investing into local entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. But in a business like Legato, is the intent to, it sounds like you're going to own the Sacramento region and really sort of build that word of mouth community here locally. How do you expect that to, be put into another geographic area? How do we get somebody in the Bay Area or LA? Right. Is there a thought of doing that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and we definitely want to grow that way. And I think with the social media and marketing these days, it's an easier connection, it feels like, So a lot of people get their information and news and groups and about what they want to purchase or buy or get engaged with, right? Is through that media, right? and we're hoping to leverage that for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, and using things like influencer marketing, using things like, you know, public relations, blogs, all of these things. I think in sort of the world of internet, it's both a necessary thing and it's evil, and it's, you know, but I think it makes it a little bit easier to be able to like mobilize into other regions like the Bay. And
who's
LA.
The face of the, so, okay, you think about that. So you talk about influencer marketing. So here I am, I'm sort of doing something in a similar way where I end up being the face of our brand, although we have a great team and they're well known in the Sacramento region, but you know, Haney Biz and Mark Haney and all that kind of stuff, ends up being a little bit of a personal brand, and that's part of who we are. Mm-hmm. How would you describe your brand? And you talk about this community. Charmaine, are you the sort of the face of the community, or is it all four of you kind of simultaneously?
Yeah, I think it's all four of us simultaneously in any moment. Sometimes it's, you know, DeSalle, sometimes it's myself or Yvette, and depending on where we step into and, you know, sort of our strengths. But I think all of us play a very, like, crucial role in the community in sort of the face of our
yeah,
company.
Yeah, I mean,
and
I think
brand.
If we had to choose, it would probably be Charmaine.
yeah.
But if we didn't have to choose, we could be flexible enough to, like, be able to pivot to each person.
Yeah.
Probably not me, but Christine.
Well, I think that's kind of the interesting thing about a community, because one of the things about it, a community is the potential for network effects. So if somebody who loves what Legato is all about, that's not even associated directly with the company, but they're part of the community, they start talking it up and they sort of share. You talked about these groups that you're speaking to, and as they fall in love with you, they want and fall in love with the brand and what it's all about. They sort of want to share it for you, I think, for the community.
And we've definitely experienced that already. We've got a close group relationship with a group that's Sacramento Lesbian Group.
Mm-hmm.
And every event that they have us there co-sponsoring. And there's another group of women who meet monthly that do takeover bars. And they're really supportive of us, too. So we try to get into all the bars that they're going to.
Perfect. I'm going to get invited out to one of these things.
So we're already seeing some of that happen in terms of people getting excited about the brand and wanting to support us.
That's great.
But also, it's really awesome now to see sort of the bars and restaurants and different ethnic bars and restaurants like teaming up with what you wouldn't traditionally think of, maybe a Mexican restaurant, them maybe going more towards tequila. Now they're really excited about whiskey, and you wouldn't think whiskey and Mexican food kind of go together, but it's really cool to see these different relationships evolve out of, you know, us being part of an ethnic group or that. Mm-hmm. So it's cool to see
the name too. Legato does sound Spanish, right? So you think
naturally.
You almost think Mexican food in some, you know, at least, that's interesting.
So, it's really cool, that, you know, sky's the limit.
Yeah, these relationships are even better because it's a win-win, right? We get into their restaurant and bar, and then we can support them as well in the events that they try to promote or the business that they're promoting. So it just creates a nice partnership.
What's success look like day-to-day for you? Are there KPIs? Are there things that you measure to how are we doing? And what kind of things do you look at when you want to know, hey, how did we do today?
Yeah, I think it's really based on kind of our sales with our sales manager and whether he was able to create a relationship with a retailer or like what we call an on-premise or an off-premise account. So that's sort of one of the KPIs we, you know, we track.
So you sell through big box retailers, you sell through grocery stores?
Yeah, we, Raley's, Bel Air, all the Nuggets, Save Marts now have picked us up. So we're in all the Save Marts as of March. The local Total Wine and Whole Foods. So yeah, we've been really able to get into the retail space.
Right. And then you also have the bars and restaurants. So interesting, you sort of maybe fall in love with it out at a bar, and then you know you can go get some for your home or a party or something like that.
Yeah.
At a Nugget.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Both are just as equally important, right? People seeing us out where they're eating and drinking, but also being able to go and access at these off-premise accounts.
I would assume that a bigger part of the sales happens in the with the retailers.
Correct.
With the bigger company, the bigger stores, they buy in bulk and so on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they can definitely push more product out, for sure.
Is there anybody that's saying, no, I don't want it? Look, I've got, there's so many choices of whiskey now. Because getting, you talked about shelf space earlier, and it's like, well, how do you get through that crowded market?
Yeah, no, I mean, with Raley's, because they're local, they were very generous in letting us in. And we think that was the reason they're supportive of local businesses. Mm-hmm. Save Mart, again, it was just finding the right access point. But I think as we get to the bigger chains like Safeway and
Costco,
they're just Target. That's another, that's exactly the point, is like, we already have enough, and there's no shelf space, or it's just a whole different ball game with the bigger chains in terms of their consideration for bringing in a new brand.
Interesting.
And an interesting thing too is I think what's really cool is seeing these retailers reach out to us or support us in such an early phase of our business, because we're women owned. And that's really cool to see, you know, them supporting our mission or our vision of that. And, you know, for companies like Target and Costco, to be able to do business with a diverse supplier is really important for them. And I heard 20% now of their business has to go to a national women-owned certification. So we have that certification. And I think that levels the playing field a little bit and allows us to compete in the market space, which is really cool.
Very cool. All right, let me put on my investor hat for a second here. I understand that you're going out for a new round of funding, another raise. Why?
I think really to be able to scale up, to be able to spend more on the marketing, like Yvette said earlier, marketing, to be able to mobilize our sales force, get our sales manager out on the streets, maybe giving him some support. So there's some payroll, you know, involved in that. Mm-hmm. So really it's, I think that the marketing, really our big spends are our marketing and our sales, payroll and,
I think we've done a good job of getting, so in terms of retailers, we're going to be in 300, between Raley's and Save Mart, that'll be 300 stores. And so being able, we did the good job of getting on the shelf. Now we need to do the work of getting it off the shelf. Mm-hmm. And that's what will help with the second raise.
What do you, a lot of times when I'm as an investor, I'm mm-hmm. talking to somebody thinking about investing. And so I'm going to kind of go through some of the questions as I think about them, so that if there's any investors out there, they might, while I might be able to, this is not a pitch for people to come invest. I think there's regulations around that. So we might have to have a disclaimer here, but I want to kind of give our audience a sense of like the things that I sort of think about as we go into to think about investing into a company. First thing I really look at is the team.
Yeah.
And, I guess what I would say in this particular situation, I went in right away and you sort of blew me away with your presence and humility, as we talked about. But I think I would still challenge you on who's doing it full time? The CEO is part time. And like that to me is you are an exception for me as an investor in that. In that arena. So how do you overcome somebody that's like myself to say, well, this isn't even your biggest thing. You're a chiropractor. You work for the city.
Yeah.
She owns how many restaurants and and so on. So, and you've got, people aren't probably going to say that you have 9 kids as a deterrent, because I mean, that would come across way wrong and I would never do that.
Yeah,
there is a lot of other distractions in your life, and you're only doing this part. No, and nobody's doing it full time.
Yeah, and that's that's obviously that's a great concern for investors. But I think part of our vision moving forward is that I'm considering putting my practice up for sale, or I'm going to be starting to back away from my practice where I can just manage it and hire somebody to run the operations and the daily, so I don't have to be there, and then shift into a full time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a tipping point with that. And so I'm hoping if it's in 2 years, in a year, depending on when that tipping point feels right for our company, is when I'll obviously take take the step for that. So we have a plan in place.
Okay.
That I'm going to go full time with the company,
and then I'll challenge that concept, because you do want us on this team because we do so many other things, right? We bring mm-hmm. a skill set that is able to prioritize, manage multiple, you know, priorities at the same time, and the experience that we bring. So mm-hmm. if I don't think you would have a team of four if we did it full time, right? Like, we wouldn't be able to sustain this full time without a new company, right?
Yeah.
And so you get the benefit of the four team members each bringing their skill set and experience, even though we're only doing it on a part-time basis. But otherwise, you'd have one person.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I agree that the four is huge. And I would say the other argument to my point, right, to take your side of this equation is, you know, as an investor, if somebody is living hand to mouth, right, then there's that. I always look for commitment level, and they, if this doesn't pay them a nice paycheck, are they going to quit on me, right? Because I mean, why do companies fail? Because the leadership quits at some level. We're not making enough money. I can go get a job. This doesn't pay enough, and so on. And so you end up, it's not worth your time if it doesn't get off the ground fast enough. And sometimes we decide not to persevere in life if it's not working fast enough. And with you, you've already have this other success. You're not looking for that quick payday on the
Yeah, thing. That's correct. And I think I can share, we haven't taken the CEO and the big board hasn't, and the founders haven't taken very, you know, a big chunk of payroll, and we may start taking modest payrolls. And so I think that's really cool for investors to see that, yes, we're committed, but we're not looking to, like you said, get the big payday and, you know, taking a big chunk of investor money towards payrolls of, you know, for CEO. And so we're taking very modest.
Okay. I like that answer. And so a direct question that I might ask a potential portfolio company is, how do you decide how much you're going to pay yourself?
Yeah, I think,
at this point, we're so young, it's like, what can we afford?
Yeah.
And that doesn't hamper our growth, right? Uh-huh.
Correct.
I think our approach is always to be like smart about how we go about anything and not put ourselves in a position where it's a dire position where we have to make a decision about whether we keep going or not. And so for us, like you said, we have other means of making money. And so really the growth and care of the business is really our priority, and being smart about continuing that growth over a period of time.
Are you guys an S Corp, C Corp?
We're an LLC.
LLC. Okay. So there's pass through to your shareholders and so on. So are we profitable? Are we making money? Am I going to get a distribution?
Not yet.
Am I going to have a tax deduction? How's that going to work?
You'll have a tax deduction.
Okay.
No, the business is making money, but the founders and investors aren't making money yet.
Okay. Understood. So what's the
plan? Reinvesting.
You're reinvesting into the company. Are you close to break even? Is that kind of the idea with reinvestments?
Yeah, close. Because, you know, like I said, we don't run a high expense sheet, which is cool. We don't have a big sort of lease payment. We don't.
Yeah, overhead's low.
Overhead's pretty low. So I think that's also expenses are also one of the big KPIs investors look at. What's your burn rate? How long, if I'm investing in this much money, how long is it going to take you guys to either burn that, or, you know, will that make you profitable so we don't have to do future raises and then we're done?
Okay. So I'm going to make sure I clarify to our audience, in case there's somebody saying, what's the difference between a C Corp and an S Corp or LLC and so on? I won't go into details, but an LLC actually passes through the company, where a C Corp, which is what a lot of companies do if they're going out to raise and really scale, more often than not, you're going to see them as C Corps, because there's a lot more flexibility and stuff, but there's also some reasons for tax why we might want to be an S Corp, or an LLC, which is similar to an S Corp in that respect. So passing that information to our listeners. But I mean, maybe I'll ask you about that. Are you happy you did the LLC? I mean, because you're going out for a future raise. Are there limiting factors associated with that?
Yeah, I think initially we're happy with LLC, and again, we'll, you know, we have a great legal team. We have a great accounting team now that can help advise us when we need to make that shift. Mm-hmm. But I think for now, we're happy with what we're currently doing. Yeah.
And then you said burn rate. So passing that kind of to talk on that. So it sounded like you're not losing a lot of money. You're not making money. And so I would assume the burn rate is minimal.
Pretty minimal at this point, which is good, which is what investors also want to see. Mm-hmm. So with this new raise, you know, we're hoping that we continue that and then become profitable by 2021 or 2022 when we look at our future projections that we're working on.
Is whiskey, you're not making the whiskey yourself, right? You have a distillery and a bottling company that you sort of outsource to?
Correct.
Okay, so thinking about the cash flow of a business like this, you're not, do you have to sit on a lot of inventory? Is this something that's cash flow positive, or is this something where every order causes you to need more money?
Yeah, no.
No, I think we're at a point where we're balancing that all out so we can... We don't sit on a lot of inventory, but we definitely...
You sit on... How do you decide on how much inventory? Is it 30-day supply, 90-day supply? Because you can get it pretty quickly if somebody else is making it.
Yeah, it's about 30-day.
Okay. You sit on a 30-day...
No, wait, not 30. I'm sorry. 3 to 6 months.
3 to 6 months worth of inventory you have sitting there ready to go in case somebody makes a big order. And then how long does it take you to get... Once you place an order with the manufacturer, how long does it take to get it?
It's not long at all. It's a matter of shipping.
Why are you sitting on so much inventory?
I mean, just we want to buy enough where it's cost effective.
Okay, so you buy in a bulk and it's a cost effective situation.
Correct.
Gotcha. And then you sell to a restaurant. Who pays quicker, a restaurant or a Raley's or, well, I won't use any specific name, or a big box retailer?
I think both the same. About the same. The
okay, so same. They both
maybe
they pay
the
you
retailer.
In 30 days
maybe
or
the
60
retailer
days.
Slightly. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, so thinking about this, and we've already talked a little bit about your sales strategy. Is the idea to do it through an outside sales force, or is there an inside sales force that's a component as well?
Yeah, I think outside for now, and outsourcing sort of our to an outside marketing firm agency, and then outside regional sales. But over time, we'll definitely want to build that as an internal team because that will probably decrease.
Okay,
our
so you're outsourcing
expenses.
The sales effort right now.
Right. Yeah.
Who, like, how do you find someone to do your sales for you? Are there like rep companies that sell this kind of stuff, or is it, like one person that kind of just does it part time?
Just one person that does it. Yeah.
It's all relationship building. We found our rep through a relationship with a brewery. So it's like, as we're out in the community and we're looking for someone, it kind of just appears sometimes.
So that salesperson that you said you hired, is that an employee, internal employee, or that's a subcontractor?
Subcontractor.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And he's great because he's been in the industry for some time and he's developed those relationships. So now he's just...
And he distributes product for other people too, similar to like that. He sells other people's things that don't compete. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah. Well, just currently beer right now, but yeah. So he's working.
That's,
just
the idea.
A small portfolio. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And we have sorry to not to cut you off. We have distributor reps too. So we have our current distributor now. That's in the greater Sacramento area.
Who's your distributor?
Mussetter.
Okay.
Mussetter Distributing, and they're through Greater Sacramento. They kind of go through, I think, to
Tahoe,
up through Chico and Redding.
Do you find that a distributor really adds value, or you really have to get out there and kind of get the eyeballs and all that kind of stuff, and then the distributor just gets it from point A to point B?
Yeah, the current distributor model right now is a little tough for brands like us. Because they're really, delivering and invoicing.
You've got to pull it through.
We're really the ones that are, creating the relationships, getting the accounts, following up with them on it. So that's part of our sales manager. He's, following up with our reps, making sure they deliver on time and keeping track.
Thinking about the regulatory climate, especially within alcohol and spirits and so on, do you have to use a distributor? You can't sell it yourself direct.
Well, because we have one of our partners owns restaurants that has alcohol, we can't self-distribute.
There's a tight house restriction.
Tight house restriction. So if we didn't have if we didn't have that restriction, we could self-distribute with a certain license.
Okay, but you just you've chosen to use a distributor.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then part of growing the company will be find distributors that handle other regions.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So we're currently looking at that now, is submitting proposals into bigger, like Young's or Epic or Wine Warehouse. So we're slowly starting to.
And I heard a rumor you were thinking about, or maybe you're doing, a new product. You've got your Legato, the big bottle of whiskey here, and now you have some other product that is going to come in to sort of, I guess, be a part of the line?
Yeah. We're starting the research and development for our new ready-to-drink whiskey with our using Legato as our like a signature cocktail in a can. Mm-hmm.
You won't use the will you use the name Legato?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we will, and it'll be kind of a whiskey cocktail that we're currently starting to research and we're developing. So we're in the early stages of that, and that's part of, you know, this next raise is using some of those funds to do the research and development for
How big is this next raise?
150,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how far does that take you? I mean, are there, do you contemplate multiple raises, or is this going to sort of do it? And then at some point you're going to get bank financing.
Yeah. I mean, when we're running sort of the numbers, and Ian's been really helpful with that, this will hopefully take us a couple years and, you know, depending on kind of our business plan, like we're still definitely wanting to build this distillery, women-owned distillery. And with that vision in place, you know, if it's bank loans or if it's more investor
funding. Yeah, if you do your own distillery. There's going to be a big capital expenditure at that time.
Absolutely.
So basically build up enough volume so it makes sense for you to make that big investment.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And you mentioned Ian. This is Ian DeWert. He's an internal, he's one of my teammates. He's the vice president of investments here at Haney Biz. And yeah, he's good with the numbers.
He's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's so awesome. And he's been really valuable, you know, in helping us with, you know, projecting and where we're currently sitting and our expenses and all our KPIs. So,
okay, good. So thinking about this, what's the vision, the grand vision? You want to build something that, what's the legacy going to be? When we look at this thing, down the road, 10, 15 years, what will we be saying about Legato Whiskey?
Yeah, I think I mean one of our visions is to put us on the map for a women-owned distillery. There's not many in the United States of America. I think the closest to us may be in Oregon. I don't know that there's any in California yet.
I don't think there are.
Yeah, so you know that's kind of our big goal is to get one up and running and.
Is there ever a time where you envision having an exit where you sell the company? Is that part of the thought? I mean, investors sometimes want to know, how am I going to get my money back? Is it going to come through cash flow and the earnings of the company, which in an LLC, that's very doable?
Yeah.
Or we might sell the company and have an exit and there might be a big payday. I mean, what do you expect in terms of those two?
Yeah, I think that's always kind of out there in terms of one of the goals, if we can, if and when we get there. But I think the distillery is probably, I don't know that they're separate goals, but definitely on that same path of, you know, getting that distillery up and running, not only because to be women-owned, but in Sacramento and kind of, again, towards that community piece. The distillery also gets us another few lines of revenue in terms of contract distilling and being able to distribute more out of there or sell out of there.
Well, how am I going to get my money back? Is that going to come through you selling the company, or am I going to get money every year starting at a certain date?
Both, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We're looking at both pathways of, you know, if we build the whiskey and again, we can, you know, there's lots of different SKUs we can start to create, whether it's tequila or another type of whiskey, vodka gin, so we can start going in or the ready drink, we can and then be able to sell those off separately, and so we can, you know,
when do you expect to start paying back distributions?
I don't know that we've looked at that in terms of timeline, but probably
two years.
Yeah, not not in 2 years, but maybe after 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2 to 3.
Okay. I'm challenging you because on the Rays, they're going to ask you that question.
Yeah. I think the way we have it, I think the way we have it set right now with our projections with what Ian's helped us, I'd say 2022. So two
okay.
more years.
Okay, cool.
Year three.
Yeah. I know I kind of put you on the spot on that, but I say this for other founders and other investors. We want to know. So I'm a little unique in the way that I invest. Do I like these? Yes, I'm going in. And then Ian, I have Ian to keep me sort of on a diet. Why are you investing in this? How are you going to get your money back? Oh, I hadn't thought about that. I just love, these are rock stars and I want to help them.
Yeah.
So I think that way, the way I think, and it's not the way that the typical angel investor thinks is, look, I like these people. They're going to be successful in their life. I want to help them be successful. I know what goes around comes around. That's my mentality.
Yeah.
I think I'm unique in that characteristic, and that's why I brought on, you know, someone like Ian to sort of go, well, Mark, you're going to want to get your money out. And
I'm
like,
temper
well,
you a
I'm
little.
Just trying to help Sacramento. I know I'll be okay. And so far, it's worked out pretty well for me because I haven't really focused that much on, oh, what are the numbers and how am I going to get my money back? Mm. It's, is this person going to be successful in their life?
That's
yes.
Cool. Yeah.
Do they have the commitment? Are they humility? Is their humility and value system seem to align with the way I think? And it's like, yeah, let's do it. Let's see what we can help them.
That's
cool. How I think. But I have a sense that from being around this community now more and more, the angel investor community, I'm not the norm in that. So,
and I think you're right on. I'm kind of cut the same way in terms of, you could probably have the best product or invention, but if you don't have the team to execute, I don't think you're going to get very far.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me just ask maybe a final question just so we can kind of, you four are doing this, which I think is really neat. It's like all four successful women and deciding to like, let's do whiskey. All right, whatever. Let's do it. Let's get the team together. Any advice to somebody who's looking at this going, that sounds fun. I would like to do that too. I have success. I got enough to, if I get three or four of us, we throw in and we could build something like whiskey or wine or yoga or whatever else I like to do. And it's kind of cool. Advice to somebody thinking that this would be a fun, you know, you can't go into it as a hobby. So to turn this into a real business, any advice to somebody?
I think it's really, it's tough. It's a tough industry. Alcohol is a tough industry. It's heavily regulated. And I think really is just having a great team behind you and great support behind you. But also you're going to have failures a lot, and you can't let that deter your vision and your mission. You got to know why you wake up in the morning. You got to know, you know, because there's a lot of days that you're going to want to throw the towel in and forget this. And I'm just going to go back to my, you know, regular job. And you got to get out of your comfort zone. And there's going to be so many uncomfortable times, that you really have to, you know, my newest thing is turn and pivot. You know, every time somebody tells you no, or every time you get a roadblock, turn and pivot and keep going, and remember your vision, remember your team, remember your investors, remember the people that are behind you who have had a lot of faith in you, and turn and pivot and keep going, and don't get discouraged, because there's going to be a lot of
I like what you said about getting uncomfortable, and you pitched at our first Mark Tank, and you seem very comfortable though. You're not uncomfortable getting up there and presenting. That's like, you're good at that. What's uncomfortable for you look like?
Or was that uncomfortable? Really, I think like rejection is uncomfortable for me, because, you know, we never want to be told no, or we never want to, have to work harder than we have to.
And true. It's human nature, right?
It's human nature. Absolutely. So,
I think what she's trying to talk about is early on, we got some pushback or some kind of rejection from the industry that we thought was a good fit. And when we got that rejection, we were like, whoa. It kind of really took us back. And it was hard. And it, you know,
as females, I think
we felt it, because we thought it was because we were mostly female coming into a male dominated kind of industry. And that's kind of the flavor that
we got.
Do you think
that's what it was?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. And so we were like, whoa, can we really do this?
Yeah.
you know, yeah. really makes you kind
any
of check.
Lesson in there.
I think it's
I guess
just,
you're gonna
yeah.
get the, you're gonna get We're that always, society, right?
Just, I think it's just the first one is hard, and then the second and third and fourth they're a little bit easier.
Yeah. You start just, getting the confidence.
Yeah, you just pick yourself up and you say, yeah, we're good enough. It just wasn't the right fit.
Yeah. How about you, Matt? Any words of wisdom beyond pick yourself back up? Because I think you both articulated that. But mm-hmm. anything that you were thinking in terms of?
I mean, I think for me, when it gets hard, it's nice to have the team because it's not just you trying to do it alone. And so that's one part. Having a team to lean on is really important. But also having the passion, underlying passion for what you're doing is important too. Because when things get hard, when they get uncomfortable, that's what kind of keeps you going. Is like for us, it's whiskey, but it could be anything else. It's basically Legato. It's the legacy mm-hmm. that we're working towards that kind of keeps us going every day.
Wow. Yvette Rincon, Charmaine Magali, founders of Legato Whiskey, one of my portfolio companies. Thanks for sharing your story. We got a little bit vulnerable here and kind of looked up. You used you as a guinea pig for our learning. And so thank you for being so so open and forthright with some of these tough questions.
Yeah, of course.
And thank you to you for being so supportive and bringing us in into your family. And we really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.